You know, I knew your father, Paul. That signet ring you got on your little pinky there, I had that inside my pinky for 10 years.
Yeah, that's right.
10 whole years, I kept the empire together by hiding that hunk of crap up my ass. It was crazy. It was really bad. One night, I did so much spice that my ass turned blue as well as my eyes. I can see you. Looking at my daughter, I can see you. Don't deny it. She's wrapped in foil, for Christ's sakes. She's there to be looked at. She's beautiful. But let me tell you something, Paul. Can't have her. Your jaw is too chiseled. I know you like spice, Paul. You must be taking too much. You've been sniffing too much spice, Paul. Wow! Little space hipster with his indie rock and roll hair trying to fight me with his little toothpick. This bald-headed guy is gonna try and fight you. Bald Elvis Presley.
Yeah, I wanted to briefly talk. So you've seen Elvis Dune 2 Presley. Now.
I'm in there.
I've seen it.
Popcorn
I've
bucket.
I've seen it
no.
twice. Yeah. The sandworm popcorn bucket where what your wife had her hand in probably. And
I said, hey, get some popcorn.
Now that you've seen it, I'm curious, because we talked about this when we made our picks. Dune 2 was supposed to come out in November, which would have been like an absolute bonkers addition to an already standout year of film. How do you think it would have fared? So in 22, 2 years ago, it won Best Sound, Visual Effects, Production Design, Score, Film Editing, and Cinematography. It was also nominated for Makeup and Costume and Adapted Screenplay. Where do you think, I mean, a lot of people were like, oh, would it take any of Oppenheimer's awards? I think, honestly, Poor Things was more in line to lose.
Production design, but again, maybe. But also because we had already seen it in that award, that a lot of that work had already been awarded in a previous award show.
They filmed them back to back. Yeah.
I don't think it would have really done much at all. I think maybe you could have seen visual effects not go to Godzilla, but go to this. I think cinematography still goes to Oppenheimer. I think sound, honestly, like I think sound still goes to Zone of Interest.
I think honestly, like I agree with you because I think Oppenheimer, if anything, I think Dune would have split with Oppenheimer more votes, and then I think Zone still would have had the backing of the international bloc to pull that out. So that would have been a really cool three horse race. But I honestly think the only thing in danger, maybe Poor Things costuming. I thought the Dune Toon costumes were really cool, but again, maybe it's just like the sci-fi stuff. You know, he wasn't nominated for directing.
Yeah, he wasn't even nominated last time, and I think the first one was better than the second one. I know we'll get in that in a second, but
it's an interesting discussion. I think I agree with you about Godzilla with like the visual effects of Dune are much more impressive, but the fact that it was filmed back to back, and I think what's good about Dune 2 is like the panoramic vistas as opposed to like the production design of like Arrakis more so in the first one, even though the Harkonnen homeworld.
That was cool. Even though the black and white and the infrared stuff going on, but
it would have been a cool addition to the races, but I think the move, you know, because due to the strikes and Zendaya and not being able to, you know, the actors not being able to promote the film, I think it was a really smart move, even though I was bummed to not have it in November. But now it's everybody's cleared out, and it's like a total runaway success. It's kind of like a pre-summer Barbenheimer in a way, because nothing else. I mean, you got Kung Fu Panda 2 in there. But so Dune 2 has made $500 million worldwide. It's probably on the way to a $1 billion movie.
In your face, American fiction writer.
Immediately eating.
Stop making $200 million movies. They failed just as much. $500 million. Ah, fuck.
Ah, shit. It's back to writing for Succession for me.
Yeah, Succession.
Actually, that show's been canceled.
Ah, fuck. Sell this Oscar. Pay my rent.
You know, we've been talking about Dune 2 for a while. Obviously, the elephant in the room, Christopher Walken casting is just so baffling to me. It's by far the worst part of the film. It takes you out of it every single time he's in there. Let's just get that out of the way, because obviously that's my one gripe, and I really liked it other than that. But
I have two gripes. But yeah, we'll stay with Walken here on the first one. The way I had said it to you afterwards, and actually this has allowed me to reflect on how I take in movies, because I immediately went to the eyesore of the movie instead of celebrating some of the great things that were about it. So it's like, oh, sometimes I like focus on my critiques a lot more than I focus on like what I enjoyed if it's not a perfect movie. So I do want to be more mindful about that and celebrate when a movie is 85%, or if it's a B plus movie, like stay in what was working with it. But yeah, Walk-In to me, when I watched it, it felt like those SNL bits where they do fake castings of movies that they show you old footage and it's like, yeah, we're going to recast Jurassic Park, but like, here's Bill Hader doing an Alan Alda impression or something, you know? And it's like, it's
Alan Alda. Great. Or like Burt Reynolds
It's
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. It's,
Whopper, no, I didn't go to a break.
But it's a great opportunity for the SNL people to just showcase some of their impressions in just a really easy format. But it was like, it was so bizarre because Walken's just still doing Walken. Like, he only has one speed at this point, which is just Walken. Yeah. And you've got this, like, incredibly menacing and scary bad guy of, like, the Baron Harkonnen. And, like,
in Skarsgård,
he's just, he floats. He's this, like, mass of a guy. He's
incredibly cool character.
Like, eats sludge. Like, this dude's just, like, terrifying. And then you get the two of them in a room and Skarsgård's, like, bowing to this, like, caricature. And I'm like, what the fuck? It was so odd. An
old man dressed in a muumuu.
Like, and it was just like the most menacing character in the entire. You've got like Florence Pugh, aka Florence Nude, fully clothed in this movie, but she's
not a fan.
There was a scene where I was like, is she gonna hook up with she's gonna keep the headdress on but go back to Florence Nude, but she kept her clothes on, which is cool. But anyway, like, she's trying to protect her dad. It's like, it's just Walk-In. Like, this is so distracting to, he also like is mostly in act three, like the pivotal moments of this movie. You've just got this weird person totally in a different world and scenario that's playing. It just was like, it was such a casting miss.
Yeah, totally. What a weird choice. Like, it's so baffling. But the movie experience as a whole, I mean, I love the first one mostly because we were so starved for the theater experience. I mean, Tenet was the only thing in 2 years. Dune comes out on HBO Max and in theaters the same day. Seeing that in a theater was incredible. I was like, fuck, yes, finally. This one, it's probably technically better. Villeneuve has said, like, I think this is a much better movie. And I guess you would kind of expect someone to say that. But it's, when I watched it the first time, I was just like, I'm munching popcorn. I'm just like vibrating. I was like, fuck yeah. This is like a blockbuster. It's like the sweep, the scope of it. That, like, set pieces where he's catching Shia LaBeouf for that first time. That stuff is really thrilling, and it's shot beautifully. That reddish orange glow in that first act, or the first set piece where those guys are gliding. The spice melange. Yeah, I was expecting to get Tom Brady in there, actually, but they're gliding up that thing, and there's like a lot of cool stuff going on. And then the second time I went to LA, I saw it 70mm IMAX. Just because I wanted to check that experience off, and it was incredible. It's just such a thrill ride, and obviously we've discussed some of the downsides to it, but it's like a really cool, badass sci-fi blockbuster.
I think when I reflect on some of my favorite movies, sci-fi is not always in there, and you know, I'm this champion of Turn the Mirror to Nature, the domestic dramas, or the dramas that I can like closely relate to, and it doesn't even need to be closely relating to, but where I see like major reflections of humanity in the film, and I feel that they get really good human emotions that I can be drawn from in those movies. Those are always like my favorites. Sci-fi itself is a concept genre in that they're ideas movies, and you know, you have like a lot of like heavy ideas coming into this one when it comes to like prophecies and, you know, controlling people. And there was one moment where I saw it with Brecken's stepdad, and he was like, is his mother like a good guy or a bad guy? And I was like, yeah. I think she's good. But then there's times where it's like this prophecy and they're trying to control people and they're like spinning narratives in people's subconscious. And I'm like, oh, actually, she might be a bad guy, actually. But like those were kind of some interesting ideas that it was is rolling with.
The Bene Gesserit, nasty women, the Bene Gesserit. It's very Shakespearean,
yeah,
right?
That's
a lot of people are two-faced.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like, different motives. And honestly, like, that final act where, like, this big final set piece, big battle, and it kind of already ends, and then all the major players are in one room. Mm-hmm. I felt that was like a Shakespeare play. We're like, oh, well, now the emperor and his defeating army, that like, we kind of cut over. We skip a lot of the major mm-hmm. fight, but... Yeah, it's like, you know, people have ulterior motives, and it's I think it's meant to be like a cautionary tale about false gods
yeah.
and messiahs, and like, do not be Paul Atreides. This is not the way. And even she says, like, you're going too fast when
yeah.
he kind of takes the mic.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's
yeah,
so
I
reluctant,
like...
and then, yeah, he has that flip of the switch, and then, yeah, he goes, like, super hard in the other direction, which obviously drives her away in different places, or Zendaya. And
yeah.
I think that's what sci-fi does, is it's using another world for us to reflect our own world within through kind of some of these grander or like bigger concepts. So it's like, they're really cool movies in a different way, but I just kind of relate to them a little differently than it's like people
yeah.
who are like sci-fi people, like those, you know, it's like they live for it. They ride for it, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of, I fall somewhere in between. I think I love the rewatchability of something like an Aliens, where it's like, that's one of my all-time favorite movies. Predator, I've seen 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
they're just a lot of fun. Just yeah, exactly. Just like these badass blockbuster sci-fi films. And I think they have a great space in, you know, the canon of cinema. And
I guess Jurassic Park
yeah.
is my favorite sci-fi movie, if you count it as sci-fi. I mean, I think, you know...
ecological sci-fi, yeah. I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
You don't see dinosaurs roaming around. Definitely.
Fiction. Well, yeah. Just yeah. It's what you don't. You didn't ask to say whether you could. You should be asking whether you should. You know. And I think.
Yeah.
I think some of those, like, are we running too fast? Just to make breakthroughs? Are we taking time to think about like an ecosystem or you know? But anyway,
no. A lot of these sci-fi movies are like The Folly of Man,
yeah.
right? Or just the humanity destroying itself with over ambition.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it has a lot to do with what hubris and pride and all. So it's like a foot in the door approach where it's like, oh, I'm going to make this badass film, but it's actually going to be about this false prophet messiah and
mm-hmm.
You know,
or the ways narratives and stories can drive yeah. people and drive, you know, whole communities into certain states. Right.
That moment where, Atreides takes over the circle and he speaks to the elders. That's where Chalamet kind of sold it for me, where I think he really came into the role of this godlike figure,
mm-hmm.
Muad'Dib. Yeah, I think he was really great in that moment where he's like, no, you can't speak unless you defeat a warrior. He's like, I'm not going to take out one
yeah,
of my best guys,
this guy, you fucking
idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah, sit down
and
shut up.
And by the way,
here's the deal.
That's another main takeaway in a conversation I had with some other buddies, but everybody needs a hype man like Stigler. Like, if you don't have a Stigler, you gotta...
Muad'Dib!
Of course Muad'Dib was saved like that. Like,
yeah.
He was easily the best character in Dune 2.
My God. He was having the most fun, man. That was a great... Yeah, probably, I mean, I would love to see that as like Javier Bardem as like a best supporting actor run. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I love that guy, man. He always crushes these supporting roles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, No Country for Old Men. He's one of the best Bond villains ever in Skyfall. Just he loves playing these like delicious.
Oh
characters.
Yeah, dude, he was awesome. The other small piece of criticism I have, which wasn't as big as the walk-in casting, but I was disappointed in the big battle scene. And George Lucas said
yeah.
this. He says, I always want my biggest scene, my best scene, to be my last scene. But you kind of have these, like, the big battle scene at the end. Instead of being against Batista and Josh Brolin, these two, like, hulking,
yeah.
like, warrior badasses, that's over in 8.2 seconds. And instead, you get these 250-pound dweebs that if I saw both of them at a bar in South Florida right now, I'm pretty sure I could, like, slap box both of them at the same time. And I'm like, this is the rocking badass fight that we're going to spend 25 minutes on. It's like Chalamet versus fake Elvis. And I'm also a very big fake Elvis hater, which I'm working through in therapy. But it's I just was like, get next. This is absurd. That was the other thing that I was just kind of like, okay, cool. These are the badasses of the movie, I guess.
Yeah, Batista kind of, his character like kind of sucked.
Yeah, like, I was like.
He was always getting his ass kicked and ran out. And
I was fake Elvis like slapping him around and making him lick his boots and stuff. I'm like, okay, come on. You could throw this guy across the room right now. I was done with that.
I think we do disagree on Austin Butler in general, I think.
You said his name wrong. It's Butturd.
Yeah, Butturd. I thought he was actually really great in this movie. I think he's was really convincing as like this psychopath.
Well, you're 155 pounds, and so you want people to think you're a badass, and that's what it is.
Well, you can be like imposing without being a hulking beast. I think the whole psychopathic take on him. And think about like Luke Skywalker, he's not some huge badass, and that fight scene with Vader is really cool. What's funny about Dune is actually like just George Lucas read these books before any of us, so he like stole all this shit and became a billionaire. I'll steal this. This book's really weird, but no one's gonna read this.
Yeah.
he just got out in front of it before the rest of us.
Add some teddy bears in here and a little robot over here, we'll call it a day.
Shai Halud, what the fuck is that? And I'm gonna make him Luke Skywalker. Yeah,
super white name, and he's blonde.
Yeah, fucking nerd. Yeah. But the second time seeing that fight battle or the knife fight at the end, it was much more impressive, obviously in IMAX, and I found it a bit more successful. But I kind of get your point where it's just a bunch of guys holding knives against each other, and like one of them, I'll stab you. Oh, fuck. And then I stab you. Okay, I win.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like a sword battle where there's more like repartee. I think like that the knife fight was, I think they trimmed it to a decent time, but I could see your point about it lacking some sort of
But they've been building up that knife fight since I think like the second or third scene from Dune 1 where he's training with Brolin, and it's a knife fight.
Yeah.
And they're, they got the shields on and everything else like that, but they've been kind of working that from the beginning.
And then you tease it with, well, my only issue is that like in setting up Faye Rotha, he's meant to be some badass, but he just keeps fighting these drunks.
Yeah.
And
okay,
then
cool
starved slaves, like we never really see him, I guess when he takes down his cousin, Batista or whatever, but yeah, whereas we've seen Paul train for, these two movies and take out warriors in their prime versus this guy, like, beating starving men. I think they could have maybe done a better job of hyping that up. Because that's supposed to be the Darth Vader character in a way, or I guess the Darth Maul, like the
big
final boss.
Guy. Yeah, and you had elements of Gladiator in there where you've got, Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator where he stabs him in the spleen.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they have like a fake fight, but he's able to, but so the, right. anyway, the, he's fighting all these drunks basically, but one guy isn't drugged, but is at least starved. And he also, he has leverage on anyway. And they tried to do that. It was kind of a cool scene, for a while there. It was an interesting hang.
I'm sure this plot point is maybe more effective back when the book was written in the 60s or whatever. But my issue was like, oh, fuck, how are we going to get back at the Emperor? And, well, yeah, family's got a bunch of nukes here. I mean, I'll take you to the nukes. Oh, great, we have nukes. Like that.
You didn't
that
know
felt
about the
sort
nukes?
Of,
they're family nukes.
How are they launching them? There's like these decrepit old. I kind of like that it's like, we're so far in the future. It's almost like a Planet of the Apes thing where it's like, no, this is what turned this planet into a wasteland. It's people destroying themselves with warheads. And that's the family is all split off. And now it's just a nuclear arms race. And that's why we live in this weird place. I guess I kind of get that. It's like eventually the world's going to be destroyed by nuclear warfare. But It just took me out of the majesty of Arrakis a little bit.
Yeah, sorry about you getting taken on the magic. The nerds fighting reminded me, and I want to get this bit in here real quick. Do you remember in 40-Year-Old Virgin where Paul Rudd is watching Bourne Identity on a TV? They've got all the TVs because they work in like a Best Buy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just kind of like commenting out loud, but he goes, you know, I used to think Matt Damon was kind of a ninny, but he's really rocking ass in this movie. And that's kind of how I felt about Butt-Turd versus Chalamet. It's like they were...
No, that's so true, too, because like, who'd have thought Matt Damon would be like this action movie star?
He's this little like Harvard dork from Boston, you know, and now all of a sudden he's like rocking.
School
he's, like, rocking
ties,
ass.
Little bitch.
He's got like Chalamet's like the... kid from Little Women, you know, and it's like, oh, he's kind of rocking ass in this movie.
The love interest from Little Women?
No. Anyway.
But, yeah, cool movie. I guess what's interesting is that, like, so part one and two, that's the first book cover. That's where it ends. And then the second book is Dune Messiah. I guess it gets a little bit weirder
more
like a human sandworm. I guess his heir and son or sister are involved, and they fuse with a sandworm. It gets a little weird.
Ooh,
so
sex with sandworms?
Yeah, sandworm sex. Mm. I don't. So this hasn't been announced, and you know, he took 6 years to make these two films, and I think he's going to take a minute. So I have no idea when we'll see.
I'd
a
like
third
to see
one.
Him do something else in the meantime. But they're already, Anya Taylor-Joy, they were kind of teasing as his sister and some stuff. Like, they haven't resolved the Zendaya relationship. Like, she, like, storms out of that final room, and it's like, you can't just leave it on that. Even though I know that's where the book probably leaves it, but it's like, it feels like there's not a clean conclusion, and everyone wants the sand sex, the sandworm sex.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're going to need that.
So now... So Chalamet is now gonna, he's touring the galaxy, and it's a holy war with all the major families, and Zendaya is just gonna be back on Arrakis, just running around. I don't know. Well, so I guess it's gonna get a bit more galactic, even more Star Wars, you know, more time jumping and or whatnot, mm-hmm. or space hopping. So yeah, I'm definitely interested. I guess Denis has said he's not going to make it until it's better than the second one. So that's the bar he set for it. And we'll see what happens. So, but I wouldn't expect it anytime soon. I mean, this could be like 6 years out.
Do something else. Give us another. It doesn't need to be a rival by any means, but if you give us another something a little different. I don't need. I don't need to do that.
Would love another like a rival-esque. Mm-hmm.